Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. When it comes to flooring, there are a whole lot of options. Hardwood, ceramic, laminate, linoleum, and so many others. Our home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today to walk us through our flooring options, to talk about the pros and cons, and to give us some installation advice. Bill, hello.
Hey, good morning, Charity. How you doing?
I am great. Thank you so much for being here. And Bill, what seems to be in style right now? When we think about new construction, what are some of the trends in flooring that seem to be in pretty high demand?
You know, what you see a lot now is that laminated flooring where they, just click the pieces together and they're easy to install. They've been around for really quite a few years now, but it just seems like that's the go-to flooring, throughout the whole house. It just, it's simple. It's really good for maintenance, holds up very well. Tremendous amount of colors, textures, finishes, and some of them are so realistic. When you look at some of the textured laminated flooring where it, the ones that are like, say, 4 to 6 inches wide, and then they give that kind of rough sawn texture to it and a darker color and kind of a semi-gloss or matte finish to them. You almost have to get down on your hands and knees and see if that's real wood. And it just gives designers and people just so many choices to decorate their home. And the thing is, too, it's easy to put down, but let's just say you change your mind years from now. It's easy to take back up and sell it, at a rummage sale or something like that, or donate it to a restore. It's not like ceramic tile where it's all, it's a nightmare to get that up. So, there's a lot of that because it's fairly reasonable in cost as well.
Well, and it's been around long enough now that we can also see how durable it is.
Yeah. And that's, because it was really funny when you and I were talking a couple days ago about linoleum flooring. And I can still remember when I was young, the look that my mom gave me when I would sit in that chair at the dining room table. All kids do it. They lean back on the back 2 feet,
Yep.
And you immediately put a dent in the flooring, if it's just like vinyl flooring or linoleum or something like that. But, you're pretty hard pressed to put any dents. Very noticeable dents in the new laminate floors or, the new laminated wood that has the embossed, finish to the top of it.
So with these click together floors, we've talked about durability, we've talked about the ease, we've talked about the look. There are such a variety of floors that you can install in your house. Would those floors, the laminate click together, be considered waterproof?
Some of them are, and some of them are just considered water resistant. So you really have to look at the quality of the product. If you're going to buy something, in that very low price range, it'll probably just say water resistant. Well, water resistant doesn't have to be much. So you'll want to talk to the flooring person and say, okay, this is going to go in a kitchen, bath, or hallway. If it's one of those areas, you really want to make sure that they tell you that it actually is, and you have written confirmation from the factory that it is made to go in those wet areas. Because when you install it around, let's say, a shower or a bathtub, a toilet, a sink area, there's going to always be water. And it's not so much the surface, it's the joints where they come together at the sides and at the ends, where if water gets down in there, because they are a laminated product. And so if they're not a better product where the glues and adhesives, aren't water resistant, it can start to delaminate. And when you have a delamination, now you have just a little bit of a lip because the interior expanded. And so, like, you might have one edge slightly up, and then that's going to catch somebody's, feet, either barefoot or socks. So, it's a pretty important item to bring up when you are looking at that flooring. That the low-dollar stuff, you're going to get what you pay for.
And of course, if you're installing it in a bathroom, waterproofing is extraordinarily important.
Yes.
Kitchen, it's pretty important.
Yep. And, you know, and that's it, too, is you know, you do still have to leave like a 3/8-inch gap, a little under a 1/2-inch gap around the edges when you install those in rooms for expansion and contraction. And so when they come up against, let's say, a shower where you have a little curb at the entry where you step over that little curb. And so you still have to have, you know, a little bit of expansion there. So that's the key where you really have to pay attention to the directions. And, you know, just call the manufacturer if you can't get anything, you know, locally as far as information, if you're doing it yourself, as to how to handle situations like right there. And they will tell you the proper material and the proper method of putting in and making sure that whatever, let's say you use a caulking or a sealer, that it is compatible with their type of flooring, because many of these caulks and sealants they aren't compatible with the flooring surface, and so then it looks like you've sealed it, but it's just laying on it, and it can still allow water in. So you've really got to pay attention to the directions. It isn't just like throwing plywood down. You know, you've really got to pay attention to what that individual product requires.
Well, and let's underscore that, Bill, because a lot of these are great DIY projects, as long as you read the directions extremely carefully, right?
Yeah.
This is not something where you want to just take it out and figure it out.
No. And I'm talking from experience. You know, my one of my son-in-laws looked at me and, you know, what were you possibly thinking after we were halfway across the bedroom? And I think, this just isn't going together right. You know, this is just cheap junk. And I'm whining and complaining the whole time. And then he picks up directions. He goes, you know, you're installing these backwards from what the directions say. And I said, why don't you go in another room, leave me alone, you know?
While I completely redo this, right?
Yes. While I, you know, you go get a pop, I'll tear it up and redo it and bring you right back where we were. So it, yeah. You know, here I am one throwing out, hey, read those directions. I'm usually the first one. Nah, this is no big deal.
So this is a project that you could do yourself. But
yeah.
But before you install a floor, you have to deal with the floor that you have.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about that. I mean, you have to assess what you have and how to get rid of it, right?
You do. And, you know, let's say you're going to put it in a basement. It may require that you put a vapor barrier or something to keep the moisture from coming through the concrete floor that's in your basement already. Every product has a requirement on there, on that box of directions, that here's the prep work that you need to do, whether you're putting it on top of plywood or you're trying to put it over concrete. Or, you know, some people have tried to put it over their existing, vinyl flooring, the sheet vinyl flooring that a lot of times, and in many cases, it's okay to do that. But yet everything that's underneath this new flooring, you know, if there's a bump or something, it telegraphs or, you know, just kind of shows up on the next level. So there may be a lot of prep work as far as leveling. You may have to, you know, buy some leveling mix to bring the floor up so there's not any rises and dips. And the one good thing about the laminate flooring is, let's say if your concrete floor is cracked, you don't have to worry about, you know, that crack coming up and showing up in your laminate floor, as opposed to putting ceramic tile down over the top of cracks in floors. You have to have, you know, basically a layer of special product down there that is going to allow that tile to remain adhered to this product you put down, but yet doesn't adhere to the concrete and crack along with it. So that prep work is really, really important. But, you know, any little thing that's on that floor now, if there's a hump in it, it's going to show. So don't think that putting down this product, even though most of them have a little bit of a pad on the bottom of it, some don't, where you're required to roll out some sort of a pad, you know, to make it softer as you're walking on, especially like on a concrete floor. You really have to think about that, you know, how extensive do I want to get with trying to level the floor? And this may be the case where you're going, you know, the flooring's easy to put down, but prep work isn't that easy. Maybe I should get a professional come in here and handle the whole project.
And if you're installing it in, for example, a kitchen, you have to think about your appliances and things like that. And we talked to somebody a couple of weeks ago who's can't remove their dishwasher because of the flooring that's been installed. So.
Yeah, you know, and that stuff looks really thin when you're looking at it at the store. And you'd better take a look at maybe, you know, let's say you bought a home, you know, you're not moving into a brand new home. You know, let's say you're moving into a new home, or you want to remodel, put the flooring down. And they've already put a couple layers of different types of floor, and there's no more room for that dishwasher to roll out. So now you may have to tear off a layer of the existing flooring, just, you know, kind of like what was happening a couple of weeks ago. That's the big one there. You just can't come and, you know, raise up your whole kitchen cabinets to install this new flooring. You have to relook at it, and, you know, the transition between this new floor and the surrounding rooms, there might be already kind of a half inch difference in height. Well, you throw some padding and this floor down, and then you add basically another half inch. How am I going to transition from this new floor to the one below? You may have to tear up whatever flooring is there to kind of transition underneath that existing flooring. So there's might be a little rise in the floor to bring it to level. And then that causes a whole nother issue. Some people are very susceptible to small humps and floors. They'll be coming across the room, and then they stumble.
That becomes a more difficult problem as you age. So we have about a minute left before we go to the break, Bill, and we've talked only about laminate flooring, right? So I am curious. Linoleum seems to be making a bit of a comeback. Most of us grew up with linoleum in our homes. How do you feel about modern linoleum?
I really like the linoleum. You know, there's the nice thing about it, you know, it's made out of linseed oil and pine rosin or resin, and then they kind of attach it to a back or like jute or something. It's soft, you know, that's where you don't let the kids lean, you know, back when they're chairs and things like that. But it lasts, you know, years. I mean, it lasts 30, 40, 50 years, and it's not that expensive, and I just like the feel of it.
And you can get it in some really bold patterns that'll really date your home, right?
Yeah, that's right. That yellow and black is a holdover that I really like.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We'll talk about some other flooring options as well. And, of course, we will answer your questions. You can join the conversation by calling 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Your questions do not have to be floor related. Just get in touch with your home improvement questions. Bill McAnally is our guest today. This is Talk of Iowa from IPR News.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the Extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here. We've been talking about flooring so far, but of course, Bill will answer your questions about any of the home improvement projects on your to-do list. And Bill, before we get to the calls, and we've got a lot of people with questions, we've talked about laminate. You mentioned linoleum and the sustainability benefits of linoleum. What do you consider to be the most sustainable option as far as putting floors in your home?
You know, that's always a personal opinion. You look on the internet, you know, and they'll put all their, I don't know why, if somebody's paying them money or something, you know, they'll all put their personal preference. To me, I really like, hardwood flooring. And because I'm used to, I guess, having something that you can sand and restain, refinish, you know, a few times. It's local. I mean, I can, you know, it isn't hard to find someone that will go ahead and mill you you know, wood, custom wood. They'll have it kiln dried for you to whatever width, tongue and groove, you know, that you want, any species you want. And it's local. You know, these other things like cork bamboo, you know, they're from Europe, they're from China, they're from Asia. They say they're sustainable. Well, I don't consider it sustainable when you got to bring them all the way around, you know, from a third world country or something like that. You know, but some of the laminates, I kind of like the hardwood laminates, me personally, a little bit more because it's, you know, it's wood fibers, and then there's that, you know, the top finish that you look at. But for me, you know, and ceramic tile as well, it's just the only thing with ceramic tile, you put it down, you're kind of stuck with it for quite a few years. And if you know, you do drop something on it, you chip it, it's a little tougher to match grout, you know, when it's aged a little bit. So to me, me personally, maybe being a carpenter, that I really like the wood. I just like the warm feel of it as well.
All right. And you haven't mentioned cork or bamboo.
Yeah.
How do you feel about cork and bamboo, Bill?
Well, yeah. Okay. Mom said, if you don't like it, just something, don't say anything. So, you know, they're just, like I said, they're not made here in the United States. I think they're kind of a fad. And I just don't trust something if it's not coming from, you know, somewhere that I know, I guess. That's just me personally. I know laminates come from different, you know, areas than that. I just like something that's more local.
All right.
We can, you know, you can have this stuff made in Iowa, hardwood. You can buy red oak, white oak, and that's just my opinion. So that's not worth anything. So there you go.
You are entitled to your opinion, Bill.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want to get me started on that one.
All right, let's get to questions. You can join the conversation 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John is on the line in Clinton. Hello, John.
Yes.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I've got a floor that the sun has hit it. Basically, the house was 10 years old when I purchased it, and it's faded. And it must be some kind of laminate. And then it wraps through a lot of my house, and it's beautiful, beautiful floor. But I got one area where it's faded.
Yeah.
And I can't get anything to really stick on it.
Oh, that is frustrating.
Is it from the sun, or did you have like a, I've seen them where somebody's had a rug for a long time, and you pull it up and, oh my gosh, you know, it looks horrible. So it's the sun?
It's from the sun on the south, side, yeah.
You know, that one's a really good question because it really depends on what that finish is on the top. If you can find the, maybe pulling up and it has the manufacturer's information on the back, because a lot of them will have the manufacturer, plus it'll have you know, the dates and all the codes. Some even have, you know, the scan print on the back, where they'll go back and find out exactly what day and everything it was made, and they'll know exactly what product is on top of that, and they may be able to, you know, give you some sort of a new type of a finish, because I've heard talks about being able to refinish and recolor some of the vinyls. I mean, that would really be nice that you can, without damaging it, somehow they're, you know, with some of the new chemicals and stuff they have. I would get a hold of that manufacturer and, you know, describe that, because that's a very, very common problem that you have, because that sun comes in and it just beats down on it, and that ultraviolet light just kind of, you know, takes the color right out of it.
Yes.
That'd be my, you know, and I know that's the first thing I'd try. It's going to be tough, I think. You know, you may be able to get hold of, you know, go to your paint store and, you know, talk with them. Is there anything that I can put as a binder, that I can put a coat of a binder to match that color? And they may be able to do that, put a clear binder coat across it, and then, you know, try with a small sample of flooring with stain it. And maybe, you know, people might not even know. And the other thing, is it the click apart? Is it the kind that you click together?
Well, really, I haven't opened it up yet. I put these floors in before, so I know how to do everything. But I got to pull all the trim off the wall.
Oh, yeah, because you know, I know some guys went at, and well, I used to do sometimes with like wood flooring. I just kind of pull that one up and then put those somewhere where like the couch is sitting or in a closet or something, and take those pieces that are darker. It's kind of like vinyl siding, you know, you leave it out in the sun, that you save a piece for a couple of weeks, and you put it up against the stuff that's been there in the sun. They don't match, so. That'd be my only guess right now.
Well, thank you very much for your
time. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot thanks, for John. The call, John. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's another John. This one's in Cedar Falls. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. Question about in-floor heating. I have a house that was built turn of the century, 1900s, and I fight it every day repairing what I can repair.
Yeah.
The bathroom came with carpet and no heat. So we're looking to put flooring down with a heated floor. We love a lot of the laminate wood products out there. Not sure how good they are with, you know, floor heating. I'm not adverse to a vinyl sheet. I'm sure they would work wonderful. But I just, what's your opinions on what is a good good surface to put heating under?
Well, you know, when I was getting ready for the show, I was looking at some of the laminates, and that was one thing that they specifically mentioned in some of them that they were okay with using in-floor heat with them. Others weren't. And I don't know if it, you know, you're not talking a real high temperature with that in-floor heat. I mean, it's, you know, like 100 degrees or something, but maybe not even that much, maybe 85 surface temperature. So I don't understand what the problem was there. But the only thing about that type of heating, it always makes me nervous, is the installation, the connections, you know, that how long are they going to last? You know, you got to keep those to a minimum. I know there's a lot of detail work to that, but the only time I've really seen it where I really kind of accepted is when they would put something like gypcrete over the top of the heated mat. You know, it's a flowable, cementitious product. It just looks like, it looks similar to just real runny cement, and it's self-leveling.
Right.
And then
put your self-leveling concrete. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So that then it's protected. And then put a waterproofer on top of that, because there's a lot of different mixes on those self-levelers. You know, you want one that has kind of that is specifically made for a bathroom. It's harder, and put a waterproofer over the top of it, and I, you know, you'd be okay. That those heating mats and that make me really nervous when they just put it over the subfloor, and then, you know, mm-hmm. You really hope you don't have a fastener coming down and smacking them. And a lot of guys come back later with an infrared camera before they put the floor down, a small infrared camera, because you can see if there's a flaw in the wiring on those. Mm-hmm. And then there's a monitor that sometimes you can rent from flooring people or manufacturers. Some even have it, that you hook it up to the wiring to that mat, and it can tell when there's basically call it a short in that wiring, even before it's up and running. So I really like when you can do that with the cement, because then that heats the whole cement. It's just not radiating up from where the individual wires are. So it's a more even heat. But they just make me nervous. They really do. And, you know, I like slippers, I guess. I don't call them slippers. That's kind of, but anyway.
Well, I call them Crocs,
I like in the bathroom, so I might be willing to take that chance.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You know?
Yep.
All right,
John.
Thanks
a lot,
John,
for the call. 866-7-
That's going to haunt me.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. Kevin is on the line in Stewart. Hello, Kevin.
Hi.
What's your question?
We've got a 100-year-old house that's got carpeting over oak floors. And the carpeting's been in there for 50 years, and the old foam pad is stuck to the floor. And it's a beautiful floor, but I was wondering if there was a way to get that pad up without having to refinish the floor.
Well, you know, there are some – the only bad thing about that is if that carpet's that old, it always makes me a little nervous what's in that pad, you know, it's going to be real dusty for one thing. And you don't want to inhale that. You don't want to get it into your ductwork. There are some, you know, it's basically, they don't call it a foam remover, but like vinyl and adhesive removers that are rather, you know, sort of inert. They're not, you know, terrible on you, but, sometimes that isn't really the best thing to do yourself because of that health issue, pulling that up and causing dust. And now some will just come in with a scraper. Some people have used heat guns in a lower setting, and you can run that heat gun across the top of it and heat it up enough so you can pull it up with, you know, like say a 3-inch bait scraper or something like that. It's slow. It's tedious. It sometimes can give off harmful chemicals, and that's the part I don't like, you know, because those fumes, no matter what kind of mask you're wearing, aren't good at all for you. So that is a case sometimes where I might have someone come in with the correct equipment to take that up. I'd hate to see you be exposed to something, especially since it's old like that, because I have no idea what they used to put in that. You know, when it's that old, some of this, you know, we're talking, if it's 40 some years old, some people still had, formaldehyde and some asbestos that in some of the materials. So I think I'd revert and have someone come in and do that for you.
Well,
but it is a good chance.
It is tedious.
Yeah, it's also tedious.
Yeah, it's very tedious. And, you know, I think I'd rather sit in a lawn chair and, you know, drinking some lemonade and watch somebody else do it. I think that'd be the hit of my whole day. but refinishing them, it'd really be nice because those old original floors are gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house and should never have been carpeted. But
no.
Mistakes were made.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you. Yep. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks a lot for the call, Kevin. All right, let's get to some email questions here. We have so many people with great questions today. Kate says, she asks, what is the best way to fill in small gaps between some of the boards in our hardwood floor? Is that a DIY project? The house was built in 1940, but the floors have been redone once. There are gaps here and there.
Well, the gaps a lot of times, especially during the winter, are natural because that wood expands and contracts. So if you put something in between, you know, just if you're doing it just for looks, I wouldn't even recommend putting anything in there because summertime rolls around and then that wood expands due to the humidity. You may cause some buckling on the floor because it can't expand. And so it's kind of like if you've ever been in a home that has had some water issues or been flooded. You can walk into a living room and that floor will be up to 2 feet in the air, you know, big, huge bump in there because it couldn't expand because the walls held it. And so just that little change of humidity from winter to summer, those small cracks are supposed to be there. So, in fact, some floors have when they're a tongue and groove, the tongue is slightly longer than what the groove is, so it holds those boards apart a little bit, and then when they expand and contract, the tip of the tongue is actually the part taking the stress. So I personally wouldn't do that, you know, for the health of the floor.
Okay. Emily in State Center wants to know, what depth would you recommend for a concrete patio and for a driveway?
Well, I like, you know, 5.5-inch thick driveways and garage floors, and then 3.5. They always say 6 and 4, but everybody uses 2x6 and 2x4 forms, so the actual thickness ends up being for driveway 5.5, and patios at 3.5. Driveways, I always like to pour it at 4,000-pound mix with a grid of 3/8 re-rod, reinforcement rod, like 2-foot square. So when you do make cuts for expansion and contraction, that those individual then cuts don't allow it to go up and down, or when the concrete does crack, you don't have different levels. And, you know, even on patios, you know, it isn't that much money to throw some, you know, fiberglass reinforcement rod. But the big key is the preparation work. I never pour concrete on dirt. I always use clean limestone. In our area, that's what we use. You put clean limestone, you know, roughly a 3-inch layer underneath that to keep water away from the bottom to keep it from buckling as much. It's a lot higher quality. You know, if you want to put a little bit of sand to help level it off or so, that's fine. But when you, like in a garage, if you just, you know, building a new home or something, and you've got these huge, you know, areas around the foundation to fill, do not use just sand, because it'll always settle. And down the road, it might be 10 years, and all of a sudden your floor is cracking, it's settling. You just go with rock, clean rock, and be done with it. And then it's, you've got a really nice quality job. You know, it's a lot of times you look at, pull it up on the internet, see how to pour these things, these do-it-yourself. They just go out and take the sod off. I can't believe that, you know, somebody still does that. But we're kind of in that pattern. Don't do that. The prep work is really important if you really want to have that last a long time. And just remember, you know, that old quote, everybody hears that concrete does crack. So no matter what, you know, don't do it on a windy day, don't do it on a rainy day, and don't do it on a day that, you know, it's usually, you know, below, say, 35 or so, or getting to there. And stay off of that concrete. And don't use salt on top of fresh concrete in the winter. In fact, you should never use it because it eats it up.
All right. We're going to have to take a short break. I'll share some advice from Cheryl. There's a little trigger warning here, so
okay.
Brace yourself. She said, we installed flooring a few years ago. It all went smoothly, and it was very reasonable price-wise, except that when I was trimming the floor, I cut off the tip of my finger,
ooh,
which increased the cost by a couple thousand dollars.
Ouch.
Just a warning to everyone. And we have all been there with DIY projects that go wrong. It is important to be very, very careful. Bill.
Well, it's easy cleanup, though, on that, you know,
oh,
that
stop,
flooring.
Stop. We will be back in just a moment. I'm talking with home improvement expert Bill McAnally. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and we are talking mostly about flooring, but of course, Bill will also answer your questions about the other home improvement projects you have on your to-do list. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bonnie is on the line in Northeast Iowa. Hi, Bonnie.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
Hi.
I live in an old farmhouse, and I have toyed with the idea of replacing my original linoleum floor. I would like to go with something of the past, like of the Art Deco area, to refurbish, restore it back to something that may have been original, although I do think this is the original floor. So I'd like to know a source where I could get the linoleum printed patterns of that era.
Well, Bill, that might be outside your wheelhouse, but any thoughts?
Well, you know what? It is, but, you know, first thing I do is pull up that linoleum in the corner, see what, you know, old newspaper articles are underneath there, because that's what they always put down underneath there. Then you'd kind of know when that went down.
But, oh, wow. You could actually date it.
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, I think, you know, Pinterest, if you went on Pinterest and, you know, put in your specific topic, you may be able to find a source there as well. You know, there's some of these, like in Chicago, and St. Paul, Minnesota, you know, that's kind of a big movement, going back and putting everything back exactly, especially in an old farmhouse. But the thing is, and most of the farmhouses, they weren't like an inner city home where they may have used a Sears package home or something like that, in the bathrooms where they had the 1-inch square porcelain tile, you know, with the white with the black or gray mortar. You know, most of the old farmhouses, their budgets were pretty limited when they're building them. So most of the time it's just a 1x6 board you know, a 6-inch wide actual board floor that probably, no, you know, there wouldn't be any plywood underneath there unless they've done some remodeling. You know, that's, but I mean, something like Pinterest would probably be my go-to to find out where they have that. I'm sure they do. You know, flooring people may have, you know, because I haven't checked with a flooring person, they might have a source. Your local flooring person might as well.
Well, Bonnie, good luck with that. And yeah. Bill, it's always nice when you get to reveal your Pinterest addiction on the air as well.
Between that and the slippers, I'm going to get a lot of grief by the time I get home.
All right. Here's a question from Jim. I'm thinking about laying new faux wood flooring in the bathroom, and I'm wondering how to handle raising the toilet stool 3/4 of an inch or so.
Well, that isn't too bad, actually. You know, what you do is you take the stool off. Where it's at now, put all your new, you know, flooring down, and you can either have a plumber do this for you, or you can do it yourself, but they have these kind of new extensions. I really don't want to call it an extension, but it's just a black rubber that fits down in your existing pipe and has a plastic ring at the top to screw down to the new, you know, base material like cement board that you're going to have, and then that brings the toilet up, and then you put, you know, some people still use the old wax rings, some are using the new rubber rings underneath them, but the key to this, the key to this whole thing is make sure that you flush the toilet before you move it, get the water out of the tank, but there's always still water in that trap. And so when you pick this toilet up, you pick it straight up and kind of waddle like a duck and carry it in the other room and set it on something, put it in like a rubber tub or something, because you're going to splash the water. It's clean water, pretty clean. And then, you know, so that you don't spill it all over where you're working. And then, you know, get a rag or something to fill in that hole, you know, something really big so it doesn't fall down into the drain hole. Some will even put like a Saran wrap and seal it to keep any gases coming up. But, you know, normally that, you know, rag is plenty. I really probably shouldn't just say do that, but, you know, seal it up so there's no gases coming back up. And then you can set your toilet right back down and then it'll be fine.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Steve on the line next in Johnston. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Charity. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I'm here too, buddy. That's okay. That didn't hurt my feelings at all.
Okay.
I'm a slippers guy.
Very delicate today,
there we go.
Clearly.
Yeah, I'm a little touchy today.
Steve, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I heard your answer earlier about concrete driveways and so forth. I'm going to make it as quick and short as possible. I re-poured sections. I didn't do it. I had a contractor do it a couple of years ago. And it was truly my fault. I didn't do a good job of vetting the contractor. So now I'm in a place where I need to replace the whole driveway and might as well do the sidewalk, because when they replaced the apron, I don't know how they did it, but the apron is higher than the sidewalk.
No.
So I've got about a 3/4 inch lip, which is difficult to do any snow blowing. So I'm going to replace the whole thing. But I've called several contractors, and some say, oh, well, we don't work in Johnston or whatever. And then others, they come out, and then they want me to contact the city to get a permit because with the apron, it hits the street. So my question basically is there a way to find and vet a good concrete contractor?
You know, there is. First thing I do is, and I'm sorry you're having this problem, because whoever put that down shouldn't even be doing concrete work.
Exactly.
And it makes me nervous when somebody wants you to go get the permit because a concrete person is supposed to be, I mean, a good concrete person has the paperwork done with the city. So they come in and cut the curb and gutter and all that stuff. So they've worked with the city and they know all the specifications and depth and preparation for that apron, especially. And some of these people, and probably this person, did the apron and the driveway maybe 5 inches, and then they did the sidewalk like 3.5. Like, that'll never have a truck back over it. You know, I mean, yeah, but go to the city building code official, and they will have the list there of contract. Well, they'll steer you to the right department, probably in Johnston, but steer you to the department that has the list of the approved, licensed, and insured concrete contractors that can work in partnership with the city and work in that gray area between the sidewalk and the street. And by the time you get somebody that's paying all those, you know, for those permits, you found a pretty good contractor. And then I would ask for at least, probably on concrete work, at least 5, entities that they've worked with, so you can really inspect the job and look at something that's been there, like, say, 3 or 4 years. You don't want something that's just a couple years. You want to see something that's been there 3 or 4 years. Then you can look at, okay, did the joints between the sidewalk, the apron, and the actual drive, did they raise? What did they put underneath the sidewalk when they went from the drywalk? And then did they put rock? You know, I'd ask them all these little things. That's a lot of money. I mean, that you're going to expend now to do this correctly. Where that just burns me when people do that kind of stuff. But just go take your time, you know, right now. But the other issue to me, what scares me, is that liability issue of somebody tripping over that, because you're walking down that sidewalk and somebody turns and trips on that rise. Until you get that done, you can look, there's concrete grinders listed. Whatever the Yellow Pages is called now or whatever. I'd ask the inspector that as well. But that can grind that lip down so somebody's not going to trip on it. That liability issue right there scares me.
Steve, yeah, good luck with that. I'm sorry. That sounds incredibly frustrating.
The other thing is, too, is you can go directly to a concrete company or the Iowa Ready Mix Association. If somebody belongs to the Iowa Ready Mix Association, the contractor, then they're usually pretty good. They really are, and they'll give you a heads up.
All right, Steve, good luck with that. Here's an email question from Joel. He wants you to talk about polished concrete floors and how concrete polishing differs from epoxy coatings or other coatings on bare concrete floors.
Yeah, I wish I would have mentioned that earlier. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another trend that's coming along, especially for basement floors and small rooms and patios, is when, you know, you can order concrete that already has stain in it. That's kind of a nightmare to work with, but all of the concrete has the same color. And so if you scratch it, chip it, break it, you're okay. Color goes all the way through. And then they'll put a brand of, finisher over the top of a spray on, a roll on type of product, you know, to get whatever finish you want, you know, like a matte or semi-gloss, something like that. But you can also get the stains, and the stains are really neat, because you can get this mottled kind of look to it, you know, a little darker, a little lighter, and it just has all kinds of patterns to it. And then you'll put, a finish over the top of that. Some will use just a thin finish, or some will do epoxy. And a friend of mine did that on a floor. I walked in and looked at it, and I swore that epoxy finish on there had to be like 2 inches thick. I mean, it just had that look of this beautiful epoxied floor, and it wasn't but like a quarter inch thick, but it gave that appearance, and that is still the neatest looking floor I've ever seen. It was a dark brown, and then it kind of lightened up and had natural patterns to it with that epoxy finish on it, and wow, that was cool. But then, you know, you can also do the stamped concrete. There's people that have the the rubber, basically a mat that you thump down on the concrete to get it so it looks like, you know, a brick pattern. So a lot of people will just take regular concrete and then they'll throw a powder on the top of it, a stain and releasing powder, and they'll stamp whatever pattern you want on it. And some will just let it weather, and then some put a finish on it. But there again, that color doesn't go all the way through, and that's the only downside to it, is when it cracks or when somebody scuffs it, you see the gray underneath it. The polished concrete in a basement floor, I mean, that eliminates any issues like mold or anything like that or mildew. You just throw some area rugs down, and you know, that's just a really neat look.
Yeah, and that's an area where the technology has really advanced a lot recently.
Yeah, it's scary. You know, they'll put it's kind of like epoxy countertops. You know, they'll put a river. You know, they'll put a light or dark blue vein going down through the floor, and you swear, you know, it looks just like a river and ground around it. The technology has just exponentially changed here in the last 10 years.
All right. Stephanie in Cedar Rapids says, I have seen code requirements about how to connect a deck to a home, and they mostly involve putting up a ledger board on the exterior and attaching the deck with leg bolts. But sometimes there's this discussion of using a long anchor that extends through the exterior wall of the home and attaches to a floor joist. I had thought it was better to build decks as completely independent structures and not connect them to the structure of the house to allow their foundations to behave as needed without putting weird directional stress on the house's structures. Can you please clarify this for me?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, there is an international residential code on attachment of decks to homes and how they're built, and all those attachments, and they make special brackets and hangers for each one of those. So you pull that up, you know, you just download that 40 pages and you can see the attachments. But I kind of agree, if you go ahead and keep it, if you have a good base underneath it, or that you can transfer, you know, the load of the deck where it meets the house down to the original footings. You know, sometimes it entails some, you know, outside of the box thinking. But anytime you hold that deck away, you know, you're stopping any moisture from getting into those attachments. And just like it allows the deck to be completely isolated. The only downside is if you don't do it correctly, that deck is not going to stay at the same height because of frost here in Iowa. Or if you have a lot of clays or expansive soils, that deck goes up and down, and sometimes it's not going to be just right. So there are some considerations, and that's where you want to bring in. Sometimes if it's a very expensive deck, you'll want to find somebody, bring in an architect or an engineer. A lot of times a structural engineer is going to be able to help that. I know it's costs some money, but it's a lot better than going back and replacing it when you're jumping outside the box and doing something a little different like that. But they make some amazing hangers now and attachment brackets that are required in a lot of places that builders aren't using. They haven't looked at the codes lately and the updates really will hold that house, hold that deck close, but yet let water go between the siding and the deck, and then you're not worrying about all that water growing around the ledger board like we used to, especially in the 70s and 80s. You know, we've pulled off old decks and the whole thing's gone and rotted because we didn't know how to do it correctly. But pull up that International Residential Code on decks.
All right. Well, I'm trying to find you a super short question here, Bill. Let's try this one. You've got 30 seconds to answer
it. Got it.
Caitlin says, I moved into a home with beautiful wood floors that are about 20 years old. They've lived through many kids and large dogs. What's the best way to freshen them up without refinishing them?
Ooh, that's a good question. maybe just put a new coat of varnish over the polyurethane over the top. It may be enough. Or just if it's like semi-gloss, you know, maybe put a new coat of semi-gloss to finish it up, or a lot of rugs, you know, there.
People like that antique
look,
yeah,
that's
right?
That's what it is. Yeah. That's the in progress look.
All right. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Thanks. I expect some slippers in the mail.
All right. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, on the air with us today. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News. Our producers are Danny Gear, Caitlin Troutman, and Samantha McIntosh. We had technical support today from Steve Cooper. You can get in touch with us anytime. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.